And now, your Chilpack Hollywood Hour with Dean Haglund and Phil Lairness.
Hey everybody, it's Dean Haglund here in the offices of Rational Exuberance, high above the historic core of downtown Los Angeles, in the middle of the Art Deco wonder that is the Eastern Columbia. This is your Chilpack Hollywood Hour, and I'm here with your co-host and mine, not a day too soon, Mr. Phil Lairness, ladies and gentlemen.
Welcome to the first Tuesday edition of your Chilpack Hollywood Hour for the year of our Lord 2015.
And the only one, perhaps. Well, maybe not. There might be future.
You can never look one day late, and
early.
We'll give the brief explanation as to why.
Yes.
We're finishing up in the very final stages of post production.
Yep.
On our film, The Lady Killers.
So exciting!
And we're truly less than weeks away.
Yes.
From completely locking picture, we're in the final stages of color correction. And we needed to make a DVD screener last week to submit somewhere, and our post-production visual whiz delivered the drive, the master drive, not the discs, because right. He was unable to author and burn a disc. And thought that maybe I would have better luck on my system. I have not, which leads one to believe that maybe there's a file problem.
Right.
However, it did give me the opportunity to go in and ascertain as to why the film was falling out of sync at
right.
different times.
Another fun job.
And also to tweak some things and to lay in some effects.
Look at you.
That I myself created in a couple key places to fix things that had always bothered me and to actually add a couple things that I'd noticed in the film. Because, you know, I love signs. I love right. signs that fall naturally within the frame.
Uh-huh.
And I tend to find, as an old documentary filmmaker,
of course,
I do tend to find these things.
Little signs, right? Arrows.
And there were a couple shots in the film where I saw signs that commented rather cheekily on what is going on in the movie.
Uh-huh.
And if we just, I don't know, threw a tiny little bit of light into that corner of the alley, for example, wouldn't that be interesting in a very kind of Altman-esque, modern neo-noir sort of way. So it's been a blessing in disguise, and at the same time, I'm in that nightmare cycle of, reauthoring,
yes.
Rendering, outputting. These are processes that can take anywhere from, 5 to 10 hours.
Right.
And if anything goes wrong, you don't know about it unless you're sitting by it the whole time.
Or looking at it.
Nearby.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can be in another room and hear when the computer is
failing.
Exploding.
Yes, exactly. Your dual core 230 gigahertz.
I did what I swear that I'm never going to do ever again to come here today, which was I set the process in motion while I came here. And the reason I never do that is, one, I've always been concerned if something goes wrong with the computer that
right.
I'm not there. But really, the second one is, I feel like the computer, the reason it'll never tend to work if I go to bed, because last night I had to go to bed.
Right.
I hadn't slept two of the four previous nights at all. And I went to sleep last night, and indeed it failed about apparently an hour after I went to sleep. But why wouldn't it? I mean, you don't want to be the employee who has to stay at work when the boss is going home to bed.
Right, exactly.
So
yeah. What about Fuzz Aldred? Can't she keep a sharp eye on that thing?
I'm not going to lie. I get sometimes a little frustrated, and I'm not the most fun to be around. Fuzz is a sensitive, feral creature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she senses very much what is going on with her person. And I don't think it's good for her to be around
that tension.
Yeah. She might start to get a little neurotic, get a little squirrely.
Right.
It's not that much fun. So she goes and stays with her beloved Lily Hollum.
If only you could train the cat to do output. That would be something, hey? A couple of treats on the keys on the keyboard. Look at that.
I'd have to give her a credit, though.
She already got a credit in the interview. She was jumping up behind
her. She didn't get a credit, but she does appear. Egomaniac.
Yeah, that is a problem.
If people don't know what Dean's alluding to, tough.
No, that's the worst thing to say.
What I mean
is that you are sleep deprived, sir.
I was doing an interview, on camera interview, as we all did for a behind the scenes documentary about the making of The Lady Killers. It's going to be a really fun piece itself. But during the interview that was being conducted of me by our friend Yoshikato, Fuzz photobombs me in the most ultimate way imaginable, and I don't even know it.
Right. And with what must be a 3.5-foot vertical.
It's a good leap. But like you were very impressed by, it's not just the leap, it's the body control to contort so that she finds her light and sells it
amazingly in midair.
If you can track down that video, that is that's fun to see.
It's fun to see.
You know, you've been doing some computer work also related to a film that we made.
We certainly have. We've redeveloped the whole Truth Is Out There website.
I said you said we.
Yes, well, you offered...
You don't separate yourself from the character you play. That's what I like. You said we, you meant you and Langley. Have been working on the website.
I gave you credit for the text that you said, this sucks.
And then I said a text. Encouraging text. It's great, but wrong.
But wrong.
It's beautiful, but let's change everything.
Stop all of what you're doing right now.
That's the great, isn't that the great producer? It's beautiful. It's wonderful. Let's change everything. I always love doing that when I, especially when I'm doing second unit, and I walk on to the practical locations.
Right, where they have lids.
Oh, this is fantastic. We're changing everything.
Let's get rid of it. Yeah, totally.
So you've redesigned the Truth site. Mm-hmm. It's still in process, but it's functioning.
Very, very close.
truth-is-out-there.com. And we haven't done this for a while, but I thought we would just address this because this is a movie. We chronicled the making of this movie for years on this very show.
Right.
It's an epic documentary that is equal parts comedy, consciousness, and conspiracy. And for those of you who to this show more recently, mm-hmm. why don't you enjoy this?
Of course, one of the big stars on The X-Files, and he's making a documentary called The Truth Is Out There.
One of the things that UFO research has done to me is instill in me a healthy disrespect for the things that government says.
They are poisoning our people. There is a population control agenda. There really are people who want to kill off the majority of the people in the world.
If we don't allow these corrupt banks to fail, then the nation will fail. And there will be no recovery.
Don't stand on the sides of the river and comment on how corrupt and dark and evil everything is. We all know that.
I don't need to have you understand or agree with me or believe. It doesn't matter to me. I know what I know.
The name of our film is?
The Truth Is Out There.
But it really isn't.
But isn't there a universal truth that science is going for?
Perhaps the universal truth is what makes us subjective.
Okay, you just blew my mind.
We will indeed blow your mind.
That's right.
The Truth Is Out There. It's available for viewing so many ways, so many places. Many of those ways you can find directly through the website truth-is-out-there.com. You can find a way to watch it on demand, pay-per-view, on Roku. You can own your own DVD copy.
Blu-ray.
Two-disc collector's edition DVD. With hundreds upon hundreds of minutes of bonus materials and a fantastic Blu-ray edition. So The Truth Is Out There.
Fantastic.
That's what we've been working on, huh?
Yes, that new software, huh? That I can make those sites in a lickety-split.
This is your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, as always brought to you by the good folks at Empire State Gas. Empire State Gas is the largest independently owned gas station chain the Northeast United States.
Very rare.
And their gas is not only organically grown, it's environmentally friendly.
Right.
The menu in their cafe is gluten-free.
Right.
But their gas itself is gluten-fortified.
Wow.
Empire State Gas, from farm to pump, we've got great gas. last week's show, Dean Haglund,
yes,
was our recounting of the best films of 2014.
Right. Maybe the films that stuck with me. I consider now not putting Asylum on there.
Well, this is the film that every week will have the moment of Dean Haglund reflecting on Asylum.
That's it.
2 weeks ago, it made his worst films list, a list of two, by the way. So it was one of the two worst films. And then a week later, well,
top 10.
I've reappraised.
And now I'm traumatized again. Yeah.
This is very bipolar of you, your relationship to Asylum.
I'm telling you, I have a Stockholm syndrome with this.
It's very love-hate.
Yeah, oh my gosh. I have been in hostage negotiations with this thing. That has been brutal to my psyche.
Please, Asylum, let Dean Haglund's critical analysis free.
My whole artistic career was based on it.
Holding it hostage. You know, we were talking about the way that three films seem to really be towering over the year, mm-hmm, in a way that we hadn't seen in some time. I mean, many films have got great champions behind them, and as our lists indicated, as all the critic lists have indicated, there have been just so many really, really good films. But the way the general conversation, with critics and awards and now the Oscar nominations, has just been so focused behind Boyhood, Grand Budapest Hotel, and Birdman,
right?
Reminded a bit of 2007 was the year we were discussing, where you had There Will Be Blood.
Right.
And
No Country for Old
Men. No Country for Old Men, which really were
neck and neck,
battling for, again, all those critics' awards, the top 10 lists, the Oscars. And then you had a foreign language film that was really, drawing a huge amount of attention as well, more so than most American films, Diving Bell and the Butterfly.
Ah, yes.
And that was 2007. Every week, every day, other than the day when we dropped the new show, I've been, making available again a show from the archives.
Ah, right.
At chillpackhollywood.com. Thanks to our hosts at Blog Talk Radio. Thank you, Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you. That's very kind.
All but, I think, right now, 80, 83 wow, of our episodes are available.
That's up.
And I've been going back, towards the
origin.
Starting at the present and moving backwards.
Uh-huh.
Some of those old shows had always been available. We'd cherry-picked a few during the years to make them available again. But I jumped, and because I wanted to hear us talk about it, so I made our top 10 show from 2008, January 2008, looking right back at the films of 2007.
I tapped films.
I made that available. It's Chill Pack Hollywood Hour number 38.
Wow.
72 minutes long. So hey, again, there's not anything we can do to make the top 10 show shorter.
Shorter.
Because
you try.
It's... Like we said, it's 20 films. And what are you going to do? You're going to and if you have an opening and a close, what are you, 2 minutes talking about each film? 2.5 right? minutes? It's tough.
I tried to jam three into a 2 minute thing this year, and it even
and we did it. Cut running time out from the year before. But man, it is
tough.
It's tough to do. But it was so much fun listening to that show, not only because of so many great films, but just some of the people that we talked about on that show, like Tilda Swinton and Keira Knightley. I talked about Keira Knightley and how it was very interesting, the case that I built about how at that point in her career, and I'm not going to say I was wrong,
right?
I said that she doesn't play characters, she plays scenes.
Oh.
She doesn't build arcs. She builds an arc only within a scene, it's scene by scene. I did acknowledge that her cheekbones could cut glass.
Yes, very good.
Easy on the eyes.
Yeah, that's a compliment.
But a doff of the cap, because truly she has grown.
Right.
And she has taken it upon herself to grow, because she could very easily have gone just the direction of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Rode that Disney Channel thing all the way out the sea.
But she really, I think for both of us, it was when she did Dangerous Method.
Mm-hmm.
The David Cronenberg
film. That's right. I forgot about that.
That she really dropped into something new and got really messy in her work. And not every role has been great since then.
Right.
But
she grown as an artist.
Has really grown as an artist.
Yeah.
And whether it be in, a more artistic effort or something more mainstream, like Begin Again, this musical comedy film that she did, where she did her own singing, she's a really, really, you can count on her as a performer.
Right.
The Imitation Game as well, which doesn't really demand a lot from her for most of the film. And you kind of wonder, well, why does this have to be Keira Knightley?
Right.
You know, because it's always a little disappointing, actually, when a performer who is so good gets called upon to be challenged not at all.
Right, and do nothing about it.
But you really do find at moments in that film, oh yeah, that's why her.
Right.
But anyway, so I just thought it was, really interesting to just, that was only,
go hear back.
That was only 8 years ago, 7 years ago.
Clearly.
And 7 years ago, yeah. And
wow.
Just the growth that she had made, so.
And just like us, how we've grown.
Yeah.
In fact, I've been sorting.
Here I am, able to acknowledge that spelling
right.
Doom for Keira Knightley was
incorrect.
Premature.
Yes, look at you. Eat your own words.
Let's do this. I mean, we're back at it. We're back doing a show where we get to talk about whatever we want to talk about. So
hooray.
Let's talk about live events.
The Chilpack Hollywood live event of the week.
That sting always starts out so loud. I've never prepared for that one.
How loud it is.
So I don't know if you have any live events.
Well,
to
of course,
discuss.
Our stand-up show.
Of course, you do.
The Big and Tall show last
now
night.
Now
weekly at the Lash was excellent last night with our own Pete Handelman.
2 weeks in a row, right? That Pete.
He had to ditch last week, so he covered this week. So.
He left the audience high and dry last
week? He left the audience. We covered admirably, but then he brought the juice last night at the old Lash, and hilarity ensued.
Now, Pete Handelman was one of the first guests we ever had on Chilpack Hollywood Hour. Tell me about his stand-up set.
He came up and he said, introduce me as Matthew McConaughey. He came up and he opened with a Matthew McConaughey impersonation, because now with his mustache and everything, he's sort of, people were like, wait,
he is, and Pete Handelman is so skinny now.
Yes.
It is.
Like he's
It is really super skinny Matthew McConaughey. Like Dallas Buyers Club Matthew
That's
McConaughey.
That's right.
All right,
exactly.
All right.
That's right. So he did a hilarious impersonation and then said, well, no, it's actually me, Pete Handelman, and big laughs ensued. So it was fun.
Good. How was the turnout?
Turnout was really good. Apparently, some people thought it was DJ night, so they came early. And then we kind of miffed that they saw comedy, but at the end of it, thanked us profusely at how much they enjoyed the show and are going to come back next week.
Nothing can really... We know this from having done this podcast for so long now. Nothing can make people more angry, I find, than free entertainment.
It's true. Particularly when you...
Nothing brings out people's sense of entitlement
exactly.
more than when you're giving them something for free.
When all you want to do is sit at a bar with your back to a laptop that's bursting out DJ busting rhythms.
That should be working on the Truth Is Out There website, Dean Haglund.
Exactly. What am I doing? Spinning.
I think that that move to weekly
has helped a lot.
Yeah, it really has.
Yeah.
So you sometimes think if it's a struggle to build an audience, and that was kind of getting back to the frustrating thing about doing free shows sometime is getting audiences.
Yeah.
Because people figure, oh, well, if it's free, I'm not as invested. I can, there's a drop of water outside. I can't go.
Exactly.
And it really just is easier because when people have to pay money, they put a value on it, and then they show up. It's easy to fall into the trap of thinking, well, if we're struggling to get people to come to this free show fortnightly, how will we do any better weekly?
Right.
But I think it has helped. I think if people know
that Monday night, every Monday there's a hilarity at the Lash for free,
as opposed to, well, is this Monday? is it on this Monday?
Right.
Is it not?
And luckily, the quality of the comics that we've had coming in now has created the buzz amongst the community that this is a great show. It's a real chance to explore material. You'll get a real great feedback on figuring out what new bits work and all that kind of thing.
I think even when it was a smaller crowd size, even the comics themselves were enjoying
yes. And there were some shows
in a way that they might not playing other clubs.
There's a lot of clubs in Hollywood that you don't enjoy because it's filled with just agents and managers, and there's no sense of joy that you're just doing your A material and trying to get your career happening from that stage, and it's a bit frustrating.
And the comics hanging out and watching the other comics, which they'll do at clubs, but it's not the most comfortable environment in which to do that. This is a little bit like hanging out in a cool green room and just bringing the audience into the green room.
Exactly. And you bring your microphone and everybody, and there's one light and a wall, and that's it. That's your show.
Awesome.
Totally.
So, any latest news on before we put live events to bed? Any news on your end about
SciFest?
SciFest, yeah.
No, David Dean Bottrell had to go over to Eastern Europe to shoot a commercial.
And, was it a commercial
or something?
I think he's playing an archaeologist. I think this is the TV show where he's playing an archaeologist.
Oh, is this the one? No, maybe, fantastic. Yeah. Anyway, he brought like 60 scripts with him to read and review. And so when he got back from that, there was going to be announcements.
And then when he gets back from that, he'll turn his attention to SciFest.
Ooh, that was good. So yeah, that's the word on SciFest, but it's still happening. And
don't worry, Jimmy Lawler. As soon as David Dean Bottrell is back, we're reaching out to him about
music.
We'll reach out to him about music. We'll also reach out to him about what Jimmy Lawler wants us to reach out to him about, which is availing themselves of his expert lighting design capabilities. Now it's time for this.
Celebrity deaths.
A couple of notables left us, Dean Haglund.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. Mm. We don't usually cover sports greats.
No.
Because I sometimes feel like that's a contradiction in terms.
Right. And I don't watch sports.
Did you watch Super Bowl?
I did, but then our TV...
Again?
Yeah. Two years in a row. Cable went out. So then it was like, well, we missed a lot of it. And then... saw the Katy Perry halftime show, and
I know it's open season on these halftime shows. I mean, it's almost like Oscar shows, right? Like they're host free,
right?
And I feel like the halftime show is it's artist free in that. I mean, what do I mean by this? Or artist proof, not host free. It's host proof, and the halftime shows are artist proof in that. There's just such a disconnect between why do we have this big gala show at the middle of a football game? I'm not sure why we have to do this.
Happened in marching bands.
And I did not watch the halftime show. I haven't watched the halftime show maybe since Prince did it. I don't know. But I do know that it's not a good sign when the best thing I can find written about a halftime show is... at least no children were killed during it. That's the best thing I've found.
Well, it's true. I don't know much about Katy Perry, but then seeing all her songs together, I realize suddenly she sings every song I hate. And that makes it for, you know.
That's a great live album title, though. Every Song You Hate. By Katy Perry. With love.
With love, Katy Perry.
Katy Perry.
The Dancing Sharks, though, I had to feel sorry for them. That they missed their choreography. And, you know, as a guy who dances...
Suddenly need to YouTube this halftime show.
You do, because there's one song segment where there's dancing, singing palm trees, sharks, and other beach-like live stuff.
Where was the Super Bowl held?
In Arizona.
Was it?
Yeah, Glen something, Arizona. Yeah, it was in Arizona. So it was only
the beach community there.
There's a big beach community. It's a beach that just keeps on giving, frankly.
I thought you were talking about Katy Perry. No, that's terrible. That is terrible. We're going to go back and we're going to scrub clean the audio on that one.
Yeah, I doubt it.
Listen, I watched the final few minutes of the Super Bowl. Very exciting. Each of these last games of these last Super Bowls have been very exciting, I guess.
Right.
Although here's a whole sport. If you follow it at all, a lot of controversial, head-scratching, unbelievable moments week after week after week. I mean, in a year rife with controversy and scandal in this league, I can't believe the just unshakable appetite and fascination America has for this game. It's getting to the point that it just makes us look so bad, as if we needed more ways that we look bad. But you know, someone who shall remain nameless,
okay,
who is very high up,
uh-huh,
at one of the networks that carries this particular sport.
Very good.
Granted, has no firsthand knowledge.
Okay.
But said, would it be a shock to you if within a few years the NFL has to admit, a la wrestling, that this is not entirely on the up and up? And my response was, no, if you haven't already noticed that, there's a problem. You know, it's the pressure of your big giant foam cheese head is contracting your rational ability to discern what is scripted entertainment from what is actually unfolding
before your very eyes.
Yeah.
So you're saying that the game was fixed?
I'm not saying that. That's an ugly, ugly connotation. There certainly could be a case made that makes one believe that, though.
Well, then there's got to be something good about celebrity deaths that we're focusing on somebody from the sports world
Way to segue back into this. I appreciate that, Dean Haglund. The once and maybe future pastime, American pastime, national pastime, baseball.
Ah.
One of the iconic figures.
Okay.
Ernie Banks.
Oh, yes.
We all know Mr. Cub.
Right.
Ernie Banks. He was born in 1931, so that he almost hit 84 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
He was also nicknamed Mr. Sunshine, for crying out loud. How could we not remember... Mr. Sunshine, look, just an American professional baseball player, but again, there are certain figures that transcend whatever field they are in, and that's why we remember him. I mean, one of those people that you know, a la a Willie Mays, let's say, the right reasons. The joy and the attitude.
Sportsmanship.
That they brought to the game. He was a Major League Baseball shortstop and first baseman for 19 seasons.
Wow.
1953 through 1971.
Wow.
Spent his entire career also with one team. That was one of the things that I wanted to mention, because it really kind of summed up this era, the 50s, the 60s, and into the 70s, where you could find a job, work for an employer all your career,
right,
where athletes stayed in one particular team and became such a key part of that community, not just the team itself.
So true. Because it's as one comedian said last night, often you're just rooting for the laundry. It's just the jersey on top.
That's a great line.
Yes. You're rooting for the laundry.
Yeah. Or for the owners.
Yeah.
And everybody hates the owners.
And the owners don't even live in the community.
No,
the owners of the Green Bay Packers does not live anywhere up there.
That's a really, really good point.
Yeah.
So in 19 seasons, he played in 14 All-Star games. So for a long time, he was at the very top of his trade.
Wow.
He's regarded by many as one of the greatest players of all time. One of the first things I knew about him was his famous adage about how beautiful the day was, and he would say, "Let's play two."
Ah.
And, you know, it's occasionally baseball still to this day plays doubleheaders, but just, you know, it's such a beautiful day. Let's play two. And I feel that about your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. Ah. Let's play two today. Let's go 2 hours.
Well, let's keep it at an hour, like the title says.
Yeah, and we'll save the other hour
for next
week. We'll record it next week.
Yes, exactly.
But in my mind...
In your mind, you're doing two.
We're playing two.
You're giving it all.
In my mind, I'm here 2 days in a row, quite frankly, because the show was supposed to be yesterday. Also, kind of an iconic figure who transcended his field, which was poetry, I think, ostensibly originally, and then songwriting.
Mm.
Rod McCune.
Oh.
He died, and he was born in 1933. So he was almost 82 years of age.
Right.
He was also a singer and a musician. But really, I mean, one of the best-selling poets in the United States,
which is
during the late 1960s,
right,
at a time when actually poetry really did sell.
When sell. You know,
the beat poets.
And yes, and all of Leonard Cohen. And
throughout his career, McCune produced a wide range of recordings, which included popular music, spoken and spoken word poetry, obviously,
right,
film soundtracks, classical music. So he really was this Renaissance person. He earned two Academy Award nominations and one Pulitzer nomination for his music compositions.
Wow.
Translations and adaptations of the songs of Jacques Brel,
of course,
that he made were instrumental in bringing the Belgian songwriter to prominence in the English-speaking world.
Jacques Brel is alive and well. Is the name of the show that has his music.
And Rod McCune, his poetry dealt with themes of love, the natural world, and spirituality. Hmm. He sold over 100 million records in his lifetime.
What?
And 60 million books worldwide.
Of poetry. So 60 million worldwide. So that means you would find one in 100,000 homes having his poetry in his book.
Well, you know, look, your critical
no.
discernment when it comes to film may be held hostage by Asylum, but your math skills clearly are not. I'm not even going to do it. I'm just going to go with that. If I had a mind left after all the computer work I've been doing, it would be blown.
I blew the empty shell that is your cranium.
That's sad. Just while you're in there, could you just like stick a sign in there that says room for rent?
And output a DVD?
Hello, Dean and Phil.
Hey, that's us.
We promised to get to this.
Yes,
let's do this with relish.
Mm.
Since Hollywood is the middle name of your podcast.
That's true.
Danger used to be the middle name of our Chilpack Danger Hour.
Yeah, that seems...
The Chilpack Danger Hour is great.
That's us driving around.
We've had those.
I know.
We've had those.
And you're a dangerous driver.
Oh, I'm the dangerous driver.
You don't even use cruise control. You just up and down
exactly.
on the desert.
That's not dangerous. Not using cruise control is not dangerous. I'm actively involved with everything that's going on. You know, I'm not the one that whenever we go on road trips has a CHP officer posting on his page, drive carefully, boys.
Okay, well, that's true.
This has nothing to do with Agent Summers' email to us.
Okay.
I wondered if you'd heard about the issue some residents who live near the famed Hollywood sign have been having. Some homeowners who live in the neighborhood near that sign are working to have the area removed from maps, going after four companies who visit the sign and fighting for other restrictions to prevent people from visiting the iconic sign. There is a full story that she sent to us.
I
wanted to get your thoughts on the controversy. As a homeowner, I certainly can understand not wanting a flood of tourists, some with good intentions, some not so good.
Right.
That puts the danger in Chilpack Danger out.
That's right.
Clogging street access and possibly trespassing. However, at the same time, having never had the opportunity to see the sign for myself, I think it would be a loss to be unable to do so. Any thoughts you have as to a compromise would be interesting to hear.
Well, in fact, you can see the sign.
Thanks again for all you do.
Oh, thanks.
It's and okay. Happy New Year to both of you, Agent Summer.
Right.
Can I start with the compromise?
Yeah, go ahead.
Dean Haglund alone decides who gains access.
I stand at the head of Beechwood Canyon.
As part of his historic tour.
That's right. You in. You
for
out.
His final
out in.
For
in.
His final three out. Months here in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
At which point, someone tour. Else, the torch will have to be handed off.
Wow.
Melrose Larry, maybe.
Sure. Or that other guy. What? Okay, so here's
that other guy.
I don't know. When I first came,
to name a few,
there was a very simple empty lot right beside the horse ranch that I'm not even sure is still there. Is the horse ranch still up there?
I don't know. I've been up there in so
right.
long. Once they blocked off your ability to literally get to the letters.
Yeah,
because
a guy built a house right on that. There was a thing right beside the horse ranch, which was a fire access road. Because up there, all the sagebrush and stuff, they needed a fire access road that you could just walk along. Part of it was paved way back when, and part of it was a dirt road. And you got to the Hollywood sign, which I got to tell everybody who's trying to get up there, major disappointment. There, it is basically aluminum sheeting on some steel girders, and that's it. There's nothing else up there except.
It was a big place to go and party.
It used
and
to.
That caused problems.
Problems,
and
of course.
I did my fair share of partying up there, and
I had a picnic up there.
It was a big suicide spot. That
right, also, Peggy Entwistle was the first to jump.
That caused some problems, and certainly mm-hmm. was not pleasant for people in that area.
Right.
I would imagine that also through the years, fire hazard,
vandalism. A lot of vandalism, tagging.
Absolutely.
I mean, Hugh Hefner paid how much? He dropped $20 million to redo. Renovate the sign after it was into decays in the
80s. That's half of what he spent to renovate his girlfriend.
Ah.
Good point. Be the mic drop.
Oh, right one. There.
Out. Boom. There it is, out.
We're too early. You just you hit that anyway.
Introduce me as Matthew McConaughey and see how nothing changes.
The point being that also that neighborhood built in the 20s, the roads were built way narrower than they are now. So you're taking those massive tour buses and shuttle vans trying to get up there while residents are trying to get down in the same tiny road. That would make it super irritating, I would think, for anybody living up there.
Yeah, that's an interesting... So there's a few different issues
right. In
this. They closed off the direct access to the physical sign itself.
Right.
You can still hike close to it.
Right.
But it's like putting a fence around Stonehenge, right?
Yes, exactly.
You can cross the street from it and look at it without paying for entrance.
Right, but, because everybody was carving their initials in Stonehenge.
Really?
No,
I spray painted.
See, it's also a bad idea.
I learned that when I was at the Cathedral of Chartres, that's the right trick is to spray paint.
Jeez. The worst advice.
Show back danger hour.
Oh, my gosh. Idiot hour all of a sudden.
Tuesdays are an odd time. We're not nearly as inspiring on a Tuesday as we are on
a Monday. We're burnt out already. The week is burnt. Monday has taken everything out of us.
So you do bring up a couple very good points,
right.
all of which have escaped me at this point. Let's go back, though, historically. I mean, you did talk about how those streets were not built for big bus traffic.
Right.
A lot of streets, people are still surprised, a lot of streets and areas and neighborhoods in L.A. are not even particularly built for massive car traffic.
Right. There's no sidewalks up there.
So it was part of the Hollywood land.
Right.
Real estate development, housing right. development. And the sign, of course, for many, many years, said Hollywoodland, because this was not an iconic sign that was put up to celebrate Hollywood.
No.
By the Chamber of Commerce or by the studios. It was the real estate developers put up a sign, Hollywoodland, to advertise their
development.
And when the company, the real estate company itself, went out of business, right, the sign stayed up and it actually went into disrepair.
Right.
It was bought, I think, by the Hollywood Chamber of Commerce, by the city. The land was taken down. Hollywood stayed. And, of course, even that sign, as you point out, was allowed to just fall into huge disrepair. If you see the movie Argo, there's an establishing shot that shows it in disrepair, even though, as we know, the year that Argo is set was after the renovation, so
right.
it was gleaming and new.
They were just trying to show how it used to.
But nobody likes a history geek at that point. So, you know, it really was an advertising symbol.
Element, right.
And I guess it still is an advertising symbol in this idea of luring tourism. And clearly, like any community, you do want tourist dollars. You do want tourist money.
Right.
I'm not sure that, like you said, buses need to go up. There are so many wonderful unobstructed vistas of the Hollywood sign.
Where to see them? On Mulholland Drive, there's a whole parking lot where it says, stop here to see the sign. And you could see it from a nice 30-degree angle, and then you get pictures of it there.
If you're on the Hollywood Walk of Fame and you want to visit the Chinese theater the handprints, see Kodak Theater where the Oscars are held, you walk up the steps of Hollywood Highland Complex into the recreation of D.W. Griffith's Intolerance
right.
set and framed right through the archway, fantastic photo op, Hollywood sign. Also, for the more adventurous outdoorsy among us, there are several great vista points when hiking Griffith Park, like hiking up to the observatory or hiking just above the observatory, where you round a particular bend and you have you know, if you hold out your arms,
right,
and you look down one arm, you see the Hollywood sign, and you look down the other arm, you see the observatory, and above it and beyond downtown Los Angeles.
Ah,
you know, these really fantastic vistas.
Even though if you don't want to hike, go park it on top of the Home Depot at Sunset and Western. Yeah, and it, on the top, and you get a spectacular view of the Hollywood sign there.
I wish I was lying about this. I've done my fair share of partying on that parking lot. In that parking lot,
so great, you know,
Sunset and Western.
Yeah, so funny.
For a long time, there was very little security up there because all the security is watching the day laborers looking for work
downstairs.
Out in front.
Yeah, yeah, right. And, yeah, protecting the inventory.
So, what do we take about this? I mean,
well, you know what the other problem is, of course, is two other things. Now, Siri, there's apps that are tourist apps of Hollywood, and one of them is taking you directly to the sign through GPS. So they're making people who have decided to go on the cheap and just put the app on their iPhone, and then they are walking through the neighborhood, regardless, like, who made that app to say, hey, trespass and go see the Hollywood sign, follow this GPS coordinate.
Here's where I come down on this. I like your point about the buses, the infrastructure in this. I don't think a lot of these tour companies have the best relationship with communities anyway.
Right.
And I think anything that maybe forces them into a more partner-based relationship with the people who live in the communities is a good thing.
Right. I agree.
And I think these tour buses are often they're hazardous. And,
right. And cheap and tawdry. And
polluting. And they cause traffic problems.
Right. And foreign-owned or whatever.
So
you know,
I think absolutely, if a community doesn't want to have these tour buses in there, I encourage, on the other hand, and this is my bias, but all neighborhoods in Los Angeles should become more pedestrian-friendly.
Absolutely.
And I think if tourists want to be able to come through and hike and walk and look, everyone ought to be able to. You
right.
ought to be able to walk in the city of Los Angeles and in the hills and in Hollywood
I
as
agree.
You are capable of
and
doing.
And you park your car at the grocery store at Beechwood. If you want to walk up there, yeah. then that's a, you know, it becomes a 5-mile hike as opposed to a 2-mile hike.
Yeah.
And so you take 3 miles to go through the neighborhood quietly, and you have it just local access only to the cars.
And then your kids...
else.
And then your kids can be out in the front lawn selling waters and lemonade.
Exactly.
And then the guy, seriously.
That's exactly right. I love that idea.
Yeah.
So,
and then, you know.
So nobody's parking up like up in those streets. Like you
have. Because honestly, let's face it. People driving through a neighborhood, whether they're tourists or not, are the worst that humanity has to offer.
Because they're not paying attention. They're looking at
this. We're
not
paying attention. We are so insulated. We automatically think if we're not paying any attention to the people out there, they must not be noticing us either.
Right.
So, hey, you know what I'll do? I'll honk at every little thing.
Right, exactly.
I'm not even thinking that, oh, yeah, the people in these houses are hearing that.
Right, exactly.
You know, I get down on Lily all the time because she doesn't trust that her car is locking unless she hears the beep, beep. Right?
Right,
and it's nighttime, and I'm saying, you know, all the neighbors are hearing
right.
that.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't trust it,
just
and if
trust
you
it.
Don't trust it, I don't know. Try the door, right? But people don't think in terms of that, and when they're driving through a neighborhood, they particularly don't. But I right. love the idea of encouraging
walking,
and then also because I think a lot of these walking tours help to. First of all, they preserve the history, as you know, mm-hmm. but they also, I think, will give most tourists a much healthier appreciation for the neighborhood as well.
Right. There was a guy who did a Groupon on his walking tour up to the Hollywood sign, but it included a whole nature appreciation. So he pointed out rare plants and some scrub and fauna on the way up. So, you know, again... It's access. Now that I'm not sure, the horse ranch, if you can get through the horse ranch to get up there now, but the one fire road is now a house. So
maybe we ought to do this. No, let's take the old handheld portable recorder. Oh. And let's do an episode of your Chilpack Hollywood Hour as we try to hike up and see how close we can get. And we can let everyone know. And we can let Agent Summer know. She's never seen it. When she comes to L.A., we can tell her the best route.
Best route? The best angle. Just go to Home Depot and party and want to look her for. That's
going
to
be our whole thing.
Yes, exactly.
You and I with the portable recorder party. We've done that show, too,
yes,
by the way.
Exactly.
Hey, we've got a few minutes to actually discuss show business news.
Hey, let's do that.
I love.
Well,
hey, did you see? Did you happen to catch Lily in her first guest starring episode on Shameless?
I did not. We don't get the as we're moving out, we're cutting all our cable, so we don't get the
everything
access.
Must go.
Everything must go. So it's strictly we're waiting for Roku to show that episode.
Very hopeful. They certainly set it up for her return. I'm very hopeful that that will happen in season 6. Shameless just got picked up for
congratulations. That's awesome.
Season. So that would be really good. And she just got a new agent, I'm sure, in no small part because of the strength of that.
Look at that.
Appearance on the show. Have you caught any of this new comedy show following The Daily Show? The Nightly Show with Larry Wilmore.
I did catch a couple episodes of that one. I'm still out. The jury's out on that one.
I don't know. Interesting that you would use that because by episode 2, when he put Bill Cosby on trial, I was pretty much won over.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That he was there was no pussyfooting on that one.
No.
That guy did it.
Yeah.
He's like, no uncertain terms. And, good for him. I mean, taking a stand. And that's his whole show, right? I mean, that whole panel of 100 or a teabag, you ask questions and are you committed to your answer or are you wishy-washy about it?
Yeah.
I think that's really fascinating. Like putting the boots to the fire, as they say.
Well, maybe we'll revisit Larry Wilmore's work on The Nightly Show a couple months down the road and see what we think.
I will do that.
And everybody's, banging down your door, Dean Haglund.
Sure are.
Asking you to say things that you've already said numerous times on the show. But do you have anything that you want to share about what apparently will be an X-Files reboot?
Let's see. What have I said so far?
Is there just anything that you want to say about it?
Well, I don't know a thing about it. But my friend David Schrader from Darkness Radio had a good point. He goes, how are they going to do the show now that everybody believes in ghosts and everybody believes in UFOs and everybody's a conspiracy theorist because they don't give their kids vaccine? Because this is like, how are you going to develop that plot line?
I Skyped with our dear friend Barb Werner, who from Germany,
uh-huh.
who is in grad school doing media studies and is going to be covering the Berlin Wall as a journalist.
Ah, fantastic.
And hopes to interview Vince Gilligan there,
look at
who's
that.
There with, I'm not sure whether he's there with Better Call Saul or Battle Creek, because he has two new shows.
Oh, yeah.
She, of course, loves The X-Files and is also very much of probably... Like, her heart wants to say, I would always want to see more of these characters.
Right.
Would always want to see these. Her head tells her, let it go. Let it go. And I wish that there was a little bit more of people letting things go in this culture. We're not a culture of letting anything go.
No.
And so culturally, at least in pop culture, which is why, as you would say, the snake has long ago eaten its own tail, right?
And shit itself out and eaten that.
So, I didn't hear that. That's very good. There's really nothing... That's one of those things where I feel... That's the mic drop. It's like, when everything is said and done... There's nothing left to say or do.
So we eat that and we do that.
So, but we got into this discussion and, as I was asking her about, her feelings about the old show and everything, one of the things that really came was about how ahead of its time
right.
it was.
Yes.
It was ahead of its time both in terms of how television was made, in terms of procedurals, in terms of male-female relationships, in terms of investigation shows, all of that. It was also in terms of exactly what you're saying.
Culturally.
Taking things that were on the fringe, bringing them into popular acceptance, at least as a discussion point.
Right.
Maybe not as a you have to believe these.
Right,
but,
not embrace
but you're not
it.
Crazy to be interested
and
in
to think
these
about
things.
It. Yes, exactly.
And so you're absolutely right. You can't recapture that. So it really comes down to, is there a concept about how these characters and their work is still ahead of the culture and the society in which we live. And if you have a concept like that, do you also have a storytelling approach that is ahead of it as well?
Right.
And you can't know that, of course, but if you're trying to recapture, if you're trying to just continue, or this awful phrase, reboot,
yes,
then this is kind of my old saying, you know, yeah, you can make it, but do you really have a burning desire to tell that story?
Right.
Do you have a story to tell?
See, and that's why I think superhero movies are doing so a thing now, because the way they were told
doing
was,
so thing now?
They're doing the thing. I was going to say great.
Asylum, give his vocabulary back.
Please. Anyway, the point is that when it was written originally in the 30s to 50s, those storylines were given lots of leeway. And so now to reboot them in a popular conscious context makes it easy to do. Whereas X-Files already had a very complex thing, to reboot that into more complexity.
I am very unclear on what we're calling a reboot and what we're not.
Right.
Daniel Craig in Casino Royale is a reboot.
Yes.
J.J. Abrams' Star Trek is with creating an alternate universe.
Yes.
Is a reboot and a sequel, correct?
Correct. Because
Nimoy as Spock Prime goes into this newly created universe, and are all the stories that we know exist.
Right.
Still, this what they're describing, this X-Files. Am I wrong in saying what they're talking about is a sequel series, not a reboot?
Yeah.
Because everything that happened. The same actors are going to be playing the same characters.
Right.
So it's not a reboot. It's a sequel.
It's a sequel. Series. So then, yes. And also,
does that distinction matter to anyone other than me? I don't expect it to. No, it's not easy being me.
Very clearly it's not.
But for 8 years, I've needed to vent certain things, and this is the latest on that list.
Well, yes.
Another movie, another beloved character that apparently is going to get the reboot treatment, if the rumors are true, and in the words of Sidney Pollack and Robert Altman's The Player, the rumors are always true. You know that. Chris Pratt to play Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
And I have seen so many sites that say, oh, that is such a smart idea. How can a casting choice be a smart idea when the idea of doing it in the first place is such a ridiculously bad idea? I'm unclear on that.
Right.
Here's a concept for me, because we don't need fewer stories, and yet what we're getting are fewer and fewer stories all along. These studios and these corporate parents, they're making fewer and fewer movies all the time, and those movies tell fewer and fewer stories involving fewer and fewer characters.
Because the concept is a product locomotive. You got to have an engine that you can hook your boxcars on of TV shows, movies,
the problem, games. Of course, is when those derail,
that's right.
How do you get anywhere anymore?
You don't get anywhere.
You don't get anywhere.
You get a pile of boxcars.
There are no other trains, buses, or
planes. Didn't build any other product locomotives.
You have not created the walking map to the Hollywood sign. So, you know, it's the old phrase, if you give a man a fish, he can eat for a day.
Right.
If you give him a fishing pole, he can be bored for the rest of his life. I think that's the phrase.
That's pretty much
Yeah. So here's what I would say, and it's a little bit of a doff of the cap to George Lucas, actually, who was interested in that last Indiana Jones movie, which, quite a surprise, turns out not to be the last Indiana Jones movie.
The Crystal Skulls.
Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Right.
To create a character that the franchise can be handed off to. And that's the character of the son of Indiana Jones, played by Shia LaBeouf. Now, this idea of expanding the universe and bringing in new characters you could follow, that's the good idea.
That's a good idea.
Expanding the universe.
Good one.
Why another reason that the X-Files was so beloved was that they would keep expanding the universe and bring in colorful characters, even having a spin-off series at one point. Not sure if you're aware of that.
No, didn't know that.
So I love that idea of expanding the universe. Now, George Lucas, with his father-son issues that he's always playing out in these movies, went in a wrong direction, and they went in a bad direction in terms of casting.
Right.
feeling they needed a name. So many things went wrong with this. But I would say take your cues, if you want to expand the universe and you want to revisit this, from your very first one that sets the template, from Raiders of the Lost Ark, where, yes, you meet Indiana Jones, but the relationship, though it was off-screen, is very clearly established between Indiana Jones and Marion's father, Professor Ravenwood, who was clearly his mentor.
Yeah.
And we get the sense that must have been much like Indiana Jones, because obviously her daughter finds them both, loves them both and detests them both
right.
in equal measure.
Yeah.
So he must have been very much like her father. So how about Chris Pratt plays another archaeologist
who meets Raymond,
who has been mentored by Indiana Jones? You know, honestly, we've talked about diversity on this show so many times before. If we lived in a better world.
Let's.
This is the section. I want a new sting. In a better world.
In a better world.
There was a very wonderful character introduced that could have expanded the series back in the 80s. Short Round in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
A little
orphan child who latches on to Indy and really in that movie is very much patterning his behavior after him.
Right.
The actor who played the character is, I think, 43 years of age now.
Right.
And has gone on to work in post-production, be a stunt coordinator. But 43 is leading man age.
Right.
And there are many amazing Asian and Asian American actors and action stars. And I don't know, how about following a grown-up Short Round?
Short Round.
Where is he now?
And
why can't we do that? Oh, but that would mean an Asian actor, an Asian American actor playing the lead? I mean, because why hasn't that happened? That seems like a no-brainer.
That seems what that one was set up for, to teach the kid.
That would have been outstanding. So please, don't just keep rebooting. Expand these universes. Allow for more stories.
Yes. Holy smokes.
And then if Harrison Ford wants to play Indiana Jones in whatever capacity he can, like we always talked about with the X-Files, if you were going to do this, I don't know, a interesting way to expand the universe might be to go and track down whatever happened to William, whatever happened to the son,
right.
Tell stories about him. And if Gillian and David Duchovny wanted their paths to cross at any point in this,
they could
open that up. And that would lead it into a different direction
right.
and give a chance to do something new rather than trying to chase and recapture past glories. And you're already behind the eight ball on that.
So don't do that.
I'm going to end with this, with again the exciting influence that your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour continues to have over the entire
media
panoply
industry.
Of media as we know it.
Panoply.
Last week, yours truly, your friend in podcasting, Phil Lernes.
That's you.
Celebrated, ranted and raved about the brilliance of the old lion, Jean-Luc Godard.
Yes.
And his modern masterpiece, Goodbye to Language.
Right.
While at the same time talking about how much Alphaville at one point had meant to me.
Right.
No sooner does our show drop than the news is released that 50 years later, it's clearly time for another remake. This one being Jean-Luc Godard's Alphaville.
They're remaking Alphaville?
Twin Peaks cinematographer Frank Byers will be directing an update of the film from a script by Frank Reyes.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming from Studio Canal. It's said to present a fresh take on the story that aims to reflect what's happening in today's political climate.
Look at that.
I'm not saying it can't be good, but I do love that...
You say it, and it happens.
Yeah, and
it's greenlit.
And we're spending, apparently, every waking day looking back to see what we can remake.
Let us go through our DVD collection. Psychomania is coming up. Sounds like a good idea.
Maybe next week we'll get into, not films that we want to see remade, but maybe we'll talk about some of these things that are being rebooted or having sequels from Ghostbusters
right.
to Minority Report is being turned into a series as a sequel to it. And as you've long advocated... It will feature a female protagonist as its action lead.
Right.
Maybe we'll talk about some of these and see if there's any that we're looking forward to or that we're saying, yes, that's the way to go. That's the pattern you should follow.
Right.
For now, why don't we just... we've already thanked Blog Talk Radio.
Yes.
We've talked about how people can find hundreds and hundreds of our episodes
at Chilpack Hollywood.
ChilpackHollywood.com. They can download them. They can stream them.
Yes.
And they can subscribe via iTunes.
Even write a review.
What could be more fun, Dean Hagman, than writing a review?
I don't know.
You can't think of a thing.
I can't. Other than follow us on Twitter at Dean and Phil. That's fun.
That is fun. We tweet once a week, whether you want us to or not.
It's easy on the eyes.
Write to us as Agent Summer did. And again, Agent Summer, we apologize for taking so long to get to your email, but right. We appreciate it. And you write us at chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com.
So easy.
I think that's it. We've talked about everything else. You can find us on Stitcher, iTunes, and at the Talk Superstation.
Fantastic. Till next week. I'm Dean Hagelin.
I'm Phil Lernis.
Belated spoiler alert.